Never mind. She traveled all the way from the greater metropolis of Lindsay, California, to be with us tonight. That's what I was going to say. She has a sobriety date of 4/11/80. Wow, that's what I said, huh? I had to ask her twice. I go, are you sure? Her favorite AA slogan is one day at a time, because when she started, she said that's all she was really capable of on a good day. I like that. And she is especially fond of page 164 in the big book, In a Vision for You. And if you hadn't read that yet, then you don't know what it says, and you should probably read it, right? Because I'm not going to tell you. Because she might. So it's my privilege to introduce Wanda B. Come on up, Wanda.
Thank you. My name is Wanda, and I am an alcoholic, among other things. Bill said, my sobriety date is April 11th, 1980, so I celebrated on Saturday. And Bill and I share the same day, so that's kind of cool. I'm going to do my best to share some of the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous with you tonight. I'm going to give you a few of the high spots when I got here and right before I got here, and tell you a little bit about what happened along the way and where I'm at today, because that's all I have, is my story. So those of you that have heard my story repeatedly, you're just going to have to bear with me, because that's the only one I have. Jim? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me tell you that. I love what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me in my life, because I was pathetic. I didn't think I was pathetic, but in retrospect, I was. I drank to excess. I was overly promiscuous. I was very deceitful and dishonest. I did a lot of things that I couldn't figure out why I was doing them, but I did. And drugs are a big part of my story. It's my qualification, so I will tell you a small amount of that. I believe that the combination of the large amounts of drugs and large amounts of alcohol that I did at the, together is why I was able to come to Alcoholics Anonymous at an early age, and why I was able to stay, because it about did me in. So if you could sniff it, if you could eat it, if you could shoot it, if you could drink it, I did it. It didn't make any difference. I did everything. Okay? So, that being said, I'm going to tell you what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous did for me. Before I got here, I was living in Michigan. I guess I better tell you how I got to California real quick. I lived in Michigan, and drinking age was 18, and that was perfectly good with me. And I had been in a lot of trouble, and I had been I had a felony, and I was very physically sick at the time. And I had hooked up with this guy who was about, I'm going to say, this much sicker than me. Because if they're that much sicker than me, I'm good. So that was my pattern. That was my life. And the sicker I got, the further I had to keep going. And so anyway, I had hooked up with this guy. He was this much sicker than me. And we had this $100 car. And it was an Oldsmobile, and it had a big back seat so you could sleep in it. And so it was kind of like, you know, home on wheels. And anyway, he had ended up in jail in Detroit, and I had been out of town with my parents. And I came back, and this $100 car was at this bar parking lot in this other town, and he was in jail in Detroit, 150 miles away from where I lived in Kalamazoo. And I'm a great thinker. I don't know about you guys, but I come up with some real good ideas. So I decide I need to get that car out of that bar parking lot. After all, it's worth $100, for God's sake. So I decide I'm going to hitchhike to the jail in Detroit to get the keys to the car, and go hitchhike back to Kalamazoo with the keys to the car, and go to this other town and get this $100 car out of this bar parking lot. That's my plan. That is not God's plan. God did not plan that for me. So I go down onto the freeway, and my dad comes down there, and in the car with my sister. And he stops, and sometimes it's kind of emotional for me. He rolls down the window, and he says, "You don't have to do this. I'll get you some help." That was the first time that my dad ever said, "I'll get you some help." And I thought, well, for God's sake, why didn't you say that sooner? But I said, I was compelled. So I said, "I have to go. I'm sorry, Dad, I have to go." So I believe this was God working in my life. I didn't realize it then, but later I've come to believe that. So I head out down the road, hitchhiking. I get a ride, get knocked and kicked out at Jackson, where the state penitentiary is. And I get a ride from this truck driver. I mean, I wasn't out there 30 seconds, man, and this guy's locking him up. And I'm thinking, yeah, I got to ride fast. I don't have to stand out here. So I crawl up in that truck, and this guy, he's got marijuana leaves painted on his cap. And I'm thinking, ooh, this is good. So he looks at me and he says, "So, do you get high?" Well, yeah. And he says, "Well, I'm from California, and I got some good stuff here from California." And I'm thinking, man, oh, man, this is awesome. So I'm halfway between Kalamazoo and Detroit, all right? And so I'm saying maybe 75 miles to Detroit. That's what it's about, roughly. So I get going in there, and by the time we get to Detroit, he says, "Oh, by the way, he's from Visalia." And he was a twin. He had a twin brother. You'll understand more about that in a minute. So he says, "Hey, do you want to go to California?" I go, "Well, yeah, I don't have nothing going on, sure." I'm a felon on probation. I have no job. I have no hope of a job. I'm so strung out all the time and loaded. I don't know what I'm doing. Sure, I'll go to California. That sounds good to me. They got palm trees and crap out there, right? So I'm headed out to California. So I don't know whatever happened to my prized $100 car, because I never went back. I never went back. So I came to California with this truck driver who lived in Visalia. And he was a twin. He had a twin brother. So I ended up having twins myself. And, well, you know how that happened. So anyway, I was using and drinking a considerable amount when I discovered that I was pregnant. And I'm not proud of that fact, but this is my story, so that's the way it is. And I didn't really realize I was pregnant. The neighbor girl told me she thought I was pregnant, and I was like, "Oh, really? I don't think so." Well, I was. And I gave birth to these two babies 7 weeks premature. And if they did drug testing back then, I'd have been in deep trouble. But they didn't. They did not drug test on a routine basis back then, because that was 36 years ago. April 30th, it was 36 years that I had my twins. And so here I have these two babies that come home, and I'm on welfare, and I have no clue how I'm going to take care of them or what I'm going to do. None. No clue. I'm terrified. But I got some courage going on. You know, I got some liquid courage and some other courage. I've got it going on, so I'll be all right. And they came home, and I soon realized that something had to give. I couldn't do this. I didn't know what to do. And I knew there was something wrong with me, but to tell you the honest to God truth, I didn't know what it was. I did not know what was wrong with me. I knew there was something amiss, but I couldn't tell you what it was. So I set on this journey. I set out on this journey to try and figure out what was wrong with me. So I started going to a psychiatrist. I was reading inspirational books. I swore off refined sugar because that was probably my problem. And I went to a bunch of different churches. I started going to Al-Anon because I figured, well, I might as well go to Al-Anon because everybody I know is an alcoholic or something. So that's probably my problem. If these people just do what I say they should do, everybody be all right. Because I have a better idea all the time. Remember the $100 car? I have a better idea every single time. Well, Al-Anon didn't work because I was not clean and sober. I was going to Al-Anon looking for some answer to why everybody else's problem was making me sick. And then the psychiatrist said, I can't help you. And I was like, well, why not? Do you not have a degree? He says, I can't help you because it doesn't matter how early I set your appointment, you can't get in here not loaded. And I said, what does that have to do with anything? You are a professional. What are you talking about? And he was just like looking at me like, okay. And I went to several different churches that wasn't working. And I just kept trying. I just kept looking and looking. But was I clean? Was I sober? No, I was not. So this is what happened. God went to work in my life again. I was over at Pine Recovery, and remember when I told you I was overly promiscuous? Well, there was this guy over there, and he was cute in my eyes. And I've since revised that. But at the time, he was cute in my eyes. And I was in there at that Al-Anon meeting. And next door, they were having this candlelight AA meeting after the Al-Anon meeting. So I say to stealth, I say, I'm going in. I'm going in there. I've never been to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in my life. But I'm going in. I mean, how many of you wouldn't bother going? I mean, I'd go into a bar chasing some guy, so why not go in there? They got candles, it's dark, I'm good. So I go in there, and this is what God did to me when I went in there. The young girl that was chairing the meeting was telling her story. And I could feel it. And I knew what was wrong with me. I knew that minute what was wrong with me. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going home. So I go home, and I know when I get home, I did not drink that night. However, I did smoke pot. But I did not drink that night, but I smoked pot. That's all I did was smoke pot. Because that's natural and herbal. And so anyway, I know that the next day, I know that I am going to have to go back down there, and I'm going to have to say, my name is Wanda, and I'm an alcoholic. And I know this. So I did. I mustered it up, and I found somebody to watch my kids, and I hauled my butt down there to that noon meeting, and I got up there at that podium, and I said, my name is Wanda, and I'm an alcoholic. And that's where it began. And my hands were sweating. My palms were cold. I was nervous. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. So we're saying the Lord's Prayer at the end. And this guy, after the prayer, this guy goes, your hands feel like you've been dead for a while. Okay, dude, thanks a lot. But Did I take that and say, well, that's it. I'm never going back to that Alcoholics Anonymous again. That guy's a jerk. No, but the guy was a jerk, but I didn't really care because I had absolutely nothing to lose. I had nothing to lose, nothing left. I have two children. I am on welfare. I have no clue what I'm going to be doing. I have got rid of their dad because he doesn't want to change his life. His idea of entertainment's laying on the floor reading High Times magazine. meeting, and I'm like, dude, we got to take care of these kids. I don't know what to do. We got to take care of them, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, that was the beginning of my sobriety, and that was April 11th, 1980. Now, I'm going to tell you a couple of serious things, because this disease is deadly. The disease of addiction, the disease of alcoholism is deadly. And if it doesn't directly kill you from a physical cirrhosis of the liver, it will kill you some other way. And there's no way out of that. And it could happen in a year, it could happen in 10 years, it could happen in a day, it could happen in a week. We don't know. And I have no gauge to tell you, well, what you have to do to make it or not make it. All I can tell you is what I have done and what has worked for me. I have followed the book to the best of my ability every day. That is the main thing that has worked for me with my spiritual growth. Spiritual growth has been critical and key in my life. Critical and key. I can't say enough about that. So, my children's father, his twin brother, the man, they both died from alcoholism. Roger had tumors all through his body. And his brother, his twin brother, had Hep C, and he couldn't get a liver because he couldn't stop smoking pot and he couldn't test clean, so he died. And I married a man in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was married almost 18 years to this man. And he went back out and he died from a morphine overdose in my son's house. That's what happens to us. That's what happens to us. And if it were not for my children's dad picking me up hitchhiking, which was in God's plan, my life would not be where it is today. So I have to tell you, when I went to his funeral, I cried. I cried a lot because I knew that God had used him to turn my life to another direction. And why he never was able to get the sober, I don't know. But that's the way it is. We all don't get it. And but I have to tell you that from the very first day when I went down there to Pine and stood up at that podium with my dead ass hands, I decided to myself at that moment, I swear to you, Frank Ross said, well, there's statistics are that, let me see if I can do this, statistics are that 34 out of 35 of you are not going to make it. And I'm thinking, well, that didn't sound like too good odds, man. So I said to myself right then, God and I made a deal. I said, God, I'm going to be the 35. I am going to be the 35. I don't care what I have to do. I do not care what they tell me to do. I am going to do it. I don't care. And here I am. I meant it. But I have had to do a lot of stuff. And a lot of stuff has happened in my life. A lot of stuff has happened in my life. So I'm going to share some of the miracles that have happened. And I'm going to share some of the tragedies that have happened. And everybody has crap that happens in their life. But, you know, we're human. We don't live forever. There's no way out of it. There's disease. There's unemployment, pestilence, housing. I mean, we're all in for something. You know, nobody's immune. We all get something. And I know that when early on, when I would look at people and see like where they lived or what they drove or how they dressed or how they talked, you know, I would compare my inside feeling to their outside appearance. And it never matched. It never matched. Because it's an inside job. When your inside gets good and clean and you feel right, it doesn't matter what's going on. And then great events will come to pass. They always do. And they have for me. So before Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a mess. I was ended up in jail in Detroit. I ended up at the mental institution. I frequented the emergency room. I OD'd on many occasions. I wrecked many vehicles. So that's just the high spots that I'm telling you. I was a mess. Okay? So I get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm still a mess because you don't get cured day one. You don't get cured year one. You don't get cured ever, but you do get better and better and better and better. So when I first get in here, I am as honest as I can possibly be from that day to the next day. But what I will tell you is what was honest the first year is not honest today. Because I have grown. And so I know that it's not okay to cheat and steal anymore. And it was okay before. It was okay. I wasn't hurting anybody, and I wasn't stealing piggy banks anymore. So if I find something, it's mine, right? No, it's not right. For example, I have one of my favorite stories I will tell you that exemplifies what I'm saying. So I managed to get a job and get off welfare. So I had to go down to the, and that was a feat in and of itself. So don't be disheartened, because I was on welfare for almost 10 years. So don't think you gotta get it all together in a year, because you don't. So what did I do for those 10 years I was on welfare? I took care of those kids. I worked my steps. I did volunteer work. I went to lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of meetings. I did what I felt to be the right next indicated thing. Then I got a job. All right. So I got this job. So I go down to the post office to get the mail for this job. I come out of the post office, and I love cookbooks. I don't know why. I just do. I like cookbooks. So I come out of the post office. What is laying there on that little ledge by the post office door? A brand new box of cookbooks. I look around. I say, well, I'm taking those cookbooks. So I pick those cookbooks up, and I jump in that little company truck, and I go to the red light, and God says, Wanda, those books are not yours. Take them back. I think, what? I found them. They were just laying there. But I knew I had to take them back. So I drove around the block. I go back in the post office. Now, mind you, I did not go in there and say, hey, I stole these off the ledge. I said, oh, somebody left these outside, and they must have just laid them down and forgot them. I'm bringing them back. So, I learned that day that if I found it, it was not mine. I had to make the best effort I could to return it to the rightful owner. Go figure. So that's just one example of what I mean by the day before that, I probably would have thought that was okay. You know, but that day I could hear what God was telling me. So as we grow, things change and we get better. So no matter, what I'm trying to say is don't beat yourself up. Don't beat yourself up. Do what you can do. Try to do the next right thing and talk to people. But if you make mistakes, which you will, because I made plenty of them, and I'm not going to go into all of them, because we'd be here all night. But anyway, just forgive yourself and keep going. You know? Say, God, don't let me do that again, please. Because I just don't think it's a good idea. And so, let me tell you some of big miracles. I'm going to tell you some big miracles that have happened in my life. Okay? So, I worked at this job that I hated. I hated this job. But those two twin boys I had, they were eating me out of house and home. We'd go out to the restaurant, and they wanted two entrees each. And I'm like, oh, my God. So, I have to work, because I got to feed them, right? So I hated that job. It was abusive. It was hostile. I hated it. And I worked there for 4 years because I had to. I felt like I had to support my family. So every day when the alarm clock went off, I forced my stupid foot down on the ground, and I got up out of bed, and I went down there, and I did the deal so I could get the money so I could feed those kids. And I was like, when you guys get older, you're feeding yourselves. I'm about to be done with this stuff. So I wanted another job really bad. And I made some, I did a resume, I put together some stuff, I applied at different places. Well, that was my idea. It wasn't God's idea. So, God had a better idea. So through a series of events, which I don't have time to go into, I ended up at COS in 1999 at 41 years old. I had never been to college in my life. It never entered my mind. And by the time it did enter my mind, I couldn't go. As I had to go to work. How am I going to go to college and go to work? And if I go at night, I'll never get done, so what's the point? Well, I end up at COS, and I decide I'm going to learn about computers because surely computer skills will help me in no matter what happens, right? So I'm going to get on the computer bandwagon here. I don't even know how to turn them on. So I get in there. I crash these classes because I'm a week late. But that didn't stop me before, so it's not stopping me now. So I get in there and I crash these classes, and I tell this kid next to me, my first class, I said, "Hey, how do you turn this thing on?" He goes, "Just push the button." I go, "Oh, okay." So I push the button. So by the end of that semester, God had a different plan for me. And I always in the back of my mind, in my heart of hearts, in the secret place that nobody knows, wanted to be a teacher. And I never thought I would ever realize that dream, so I didn't even verbalize it. I didn't even spend much time thinking about it. And when I was a little girl, my sister and brother, they didn't like it very good because I was always the teacher. They didn't like it. But I loved it. So, by the end of that semester, God showed me that I could do what I really wanted to do. I didn't know how. He didn't say all the details. He didn't tell me how it was all going to unfold. But he said, "You can be a teacher. You just go and you look for resources. You just get yourself out there. You apply for everything. Apply for scholarships. Apply for loans. And do the best you can and put one foot in front of the other and keep on going." And I graduated from Fresno State in 2004. Well, first I graduated from COS with 2 degrees. It's God. It's God pushing me to do what I was made to do. And so anyway, I ended up getting a minor degree in computer application because I took all those computer classes. And I got a teaching credential on my 5th year of college. And then I went to work. And then I'm an overzealous overachiever. I'm compulsive and obsessive and anal and all that other stuff. So you take all that stuff that's wrong with you and you turn it into good. And I'm also hypervigilant in the extreme. That comes from growing up in a dysfunctional family, which the psychiatrist or the counselor told me when I had to go to counseling on one of my times. I had to go to counseling. So I took all that stuff and turned it into something good. And I ended up getting a master's degree the first 2 years I was teaching. Now, who would have thought about this welfare woman coming out of Detroit? I think I had 2 pairs of jeans when I got here, and I bought a dress for 10 cents at a yard sale. So I had a 10-cent dress, and I thought that was good. Because it was kind of ugly, but I put a colored belt on, and I thought that might spruce it up a little bit. It did. So, I got to become a teacher. And I can say today that I love my job. Now, don't hate me, because when people used to tell me they loved their job, I used to think, "Screw you, I hate my job." How do you get to have a job you love? I don't like my job. But I love my job today. I love it. I get to teach those little kids about principles before personalities, and they don't even know it. And I love it. I love it, love it, love it. And there is nothing more satisfying than having a kid go, hey, this was the best day of my life for something simple. It just, oh, God, it makes my heart just fill. Okay, so I get my dream career, and I am loving it. Okay, well, I divorced my husband because he was gambling and using and drinking again. Then he died, and so I was living by myself and working my steps, working my job. I have my God, my faith. I have my friends. Everything's going along great. I'm loving life, right? So my daughter-in-law says, and my son, don't you want to go out on a date? No, not particularly. Well, don't you just want to go out to dinner? I do go out to dinner every Friday night with all my friends after the AA meeting. Well, that's not what we're talking about. I go, well, I don't really, I said, look, this is the deal, children. If God wants me to have somebody in my life, God will take them and drop them right there. And I'll do nothing. I will do nothing. Now, listen to me. I did not feel that way for the first 20 years. So, it took some time to get there. I did not feel like that for a long time. So I tell them, if God wants me to have somebody, I won't have to do anything. It'll happen. I didn't have much hope of that because I saw what was in Visalia and it wasn't looking good. I'm bad. Okay, so let me move on. So I lived in Visalia for 38 years or something like that. So my daughter-in-law, I come home from work one day and my daughter-in-law has put me on OurTime.com. You know what that is? Dating. I say, Stephanie, I told you not to do that. She goes, well, just come and look at it. Just come over here and look at it. Okay, so here's what God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. This is another God thing, total God thing. So she goes, well, just come and look at it. So I go look at it. Well, what happens when you look at it? You get sucked in. That's what happens. I was like, wow, okay. She goes, well, now you got to write something. Write something. Write something? Yeah, you have to write something about yourself. No, great. All right, I got it. I'm going to get rid of 90% of the riffraff right off the top. So I write out of the 12 by 12, the 12th step, I write. I believe that a relationship between a man and a woman should be spiritual, mental or emotional first? Spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. Physical's last for a reason. So I write that and I say, and I will settle for nothing less. Period. I thought it sounded pretty good. And I thought, well, I'll probably get rid of most of the people with this stuff, right? So I go along for about 2 weeks, and I'm looking at all these pictures and reading all this stuff, and I'm like, oh my God, all they want to do is walk on the beach and drink wine, and they're gourmet cooks, and they lie, and oh my, this is for the birds, man. So I tell Stephanie, I am turning this stupid thing off. This is, I have looked at every person between Modesto and Bakersfield, and there is nothing out there. I'm telling you, nothing. So she goes, well, no, Mom, just wait till the end of the month. I say, okay, I'll wait till the end of the month, all right? So the next time I go on there, they pop you up 3 people every day. It's supposed to be some kind of match, right? I wasn't seeing it. So the next time I go on there, a picture pops up. This is what it looks like. It's a selfie. And I look at that guy and I think, well, it's kind of hard to tell what he looks like because he's kind of like this, but he kind of looks cute, but I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell. So I think, well, I'm going to read the information. We'll see what we got here. So I read the information, and it says that he's tall. That was something. If they were 5'11 or less, I went ahead and deleted them because I wasn't. I'm not going there. Okay, so I'm telling the truth here. So I go and I read this guy's thing, and it says, okay, he's over 6 foot tall, and he lives in Porterville. Okay, well, that's not Bakersfield, so I guess we're good. That's not that far, right? Porterville's not that far, so I'm thinking, okay, what? So then I read a little further, and it says, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. I go to church every Sunday unless my work interferes, and I like riding with my clean and sober friends. Well, I'm thinking, I think I better send a message. Should I send a message? I think I should. So I send a message. I am so stupid. I still felt uncomfortable and nervous. So I send this message. Clean and sober is good. What kind of message is that? So I get my message back and it says, are you in recovery? So I send my message back and I say, yes. I've been sober for some time. Because I'm not telling anybody how long I've been around here, because as soon as you do, it's just not a good idea. I am not saying it yet. So he sends me back a message. Yes, I've been clean and sober some time too. So then my alcoholic mind takes over. Well, what does he mean sometime? What does that mean? 60 days? What does he think? 30 days? A year? What does he mean sometime? What does that mean? This is in my head. So we send a few more messages back and forth, and we talk on the phone. And I say, first thing I say, how long you got? He says, well, I'll have 20 years in January. And he says, well, how long you got? And I say, well, I'll have whatever it was at the time. He goes, did I read your age right? Yes, you did. I said, when you hear my story, you'll get it. You'll understand when you hear my story. So we decide to meet at Starbucks. And we meet over here at Starbucks on Mooney, and we start talking. And lo and behold, we know people in common from the program. Oh, you know her? I know her. You know her? You know him? Yeah. And things clicked with us. It clicked. Okay? So we go along. We date for a short amount of time. And we met September 4th. He asked me to get married November 11th. We got married June 15th, and we'll be married 2 years this June. Thank you. And when I'm going to wrap it up here in just a minute. Okay. I'm looking at the time here. So he says, I say, when we first meet, I say, you got to hear this. I say, you know, I could talk to a fence post. So if I get a little carried away, just smile and nod. And I go, and if I know I'm asking all these questions, do you have anything you want to ask me? And he goes, well, yes, I do. And I'm thinking, oh, here it comes. He says, would you ride on my motorcycle with me? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I guess. It's been a long time, but I probably could figure it out. I go, well, can you keep me from falling off? And he says, oh, yes, I can. So I was a little nervous about it because, like I said, it had been a long time since I've been on the back of a motorcycle. But I have come to love riding with my husband. I have come to love it. It is awesome. And I never thought I would love it that much. So I lived in Visalia. He lived in Porterville. So we bought a house in Lindsay because he works in Porterville. I still work in Visalia. So we got a house in the middle. And God blessed us beyond my wildest dreams. God has blessed me so much, so many times. I can't tell you. And I just keep putting one foot in front of the other and doing the right indicated thing. But I have had my share of tragedy too. I don't want you to think it's all been roses and rainbows, because it hasn't. People have died. People have gotten diseases. I've been estranged from one of my sons. I had to work those crappy ass jobs until God decided I put in enough time. But every day, from the first day to this day, I have had gratitude in my heart for everything that I have. In the beginning, it was because I had a table and some chairs to sit around. That was what I was grateful for in the beginning. It was because I had oranges on my table. I took pictures of them even, because I thought, I was so thankful I had these oranges. I mean, stuff like that. And I continue to look at all of the things I have to be grateful for. And that is a big key. If you're grateful, it's hard to carry a resentment around with you if you're grateful for wherever you are. No matter where you're at, if you're grateful for one thing, it can grow and blossom and become huge. One little thing. Just pick anything to be grateful for. You know, I'm grateful I got 3 pairs of pants instead of 2. That's what I'm talking about. I'm grateful that the neighbor gave me a Christmas tree because I didn't have one. I'm grateful that the church came and brought my kids some presents because I didn't have any for them. Anything to be grateful for will sustain you for the good life to come, because it comes. And it does. It really, really does. And I'm going to close with, there's my husband right there. Wave, Dave. So, that's my Cinderella story. I'm done. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, let's hear it from Wanda one more time. Great job. That was a wonderful message of hope.